Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The world might feel a little dark right now. It's easy to let yourself get down. So take my hand.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 158 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release podcasts. But you can also listen to us on many other streaming services such as Stitcher, Google Play, and iHeartRadio and Spotify. Please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more people out there around the globe that would love to listen to us. And now for today's episode. Today is the return of the Survival Tour. Now, you guys heard from Mark Ward and Stephen Reynolds a couple weeks ago, just as they were starting out on their huge 1,500-kilometer bike ride to raise awareness for the live events industries that have seriously taken a hit during the COVID pandemic. Beyond their work for the We Make Events campaigns, they're also raising money for charity in the process. And it's not too late to donate, but we'll get you those details at the end of the ep. You'll hear Mark and Stephen take us through their journey from Newcastle to London via Leeds, Manchester, Liverpool, Oxford, Brighton, many, many, many more. And the topics you can hear, as you can imagine, will include saddle soreness, ouch, and crashing into buses, also an ouch. But I'll let them tell you all about it. Have a listen.
Together we stand.
Congratulations, first of all, on what was a successful, safe, we'll talk about a bus incident in a minute, but a safe bike ride from Newcastle all around some incredible venues and back up to London, ending on Sunday, to, you know, it, just the pictures that have come off the tour have been phenomenal. I just want to take you right back to where we first talked, which is after 2 days of riding. Take me through, if you can, before we talk about why you did it again, but take me through what it was like those first couple days on the road, and how did you cope with the tremendous amount of rain that you guys had the first few days?
We've got to talk about the weather. I mean, we were 2 days into it. I can't remember. I think we were in Leeds or Manchester when we spoke to you. And
Leeds, yeah.
We just come out the back of Storm Alex, torrential rain. I'd never been as wet in my life as I was after those first few days. And we the morning that we woke up and had a bit of sunshine, we were cycling through floods on the road, and there's some footage of like being a foot deep through. I think Mark getting soaked by an overeager Range Rover at one point.
Yeah, he was a charming man. He thought it was really funny. We didn't.
And yeah, it was pretty relentless. So I mean, we was glad when we got through, I think like day six or something, and we had nearly a full day of sunshine. Still very cold though.
Yeah.
And yeah. One of the things for us, John, that I think we chatted about when we were in Leeds was that the five of us have all done a bunch of work together down the years. We've been through some pretty tough bits and pieces already and come out the other side. So we all kind of had each other's backs. Everybody knew that. There was a lot of support within the team. If somebody was having a rough hour or a rough day, there was some gentle ribbing, but it was basically, you know, arm around the shoulder, come on, let's get on with it. And as Steve said, I think in some ways having that dreadful weather right at the start was good for us because we kind of figured out, okay, this is as bad as it's going to get. It's all uphill and better weather from here.
We're talking about the team. We mentioned the guys before in the first podcast episode that we recorded a few weeks ago. How did the rest of the team cope? You know, you had five riders, one support?
That's right. Five riders, one driver.
Did anyone turn out to be like the cycling, the one to kind of pull everybody up?
Harry, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Harry was, you know, he's 31, fit, climbs mountains for fun.
Oh.
And he has a pretty steely attitude. And he's a big, powerful guy. So, yeah, he was at the front. Maybe earlier than the rest of us, but you know, we all took it in turns. We all had our time at the front. We all had our time at the back.
Yeah.
Harry always stormed the hills, which was encouraging for everybody and incredibly depressing for me, because I was always bringing up the rear. But we did make it up all the hills at our own pace.
And a lot of those hills were in the first 6 days. I mean, you guys went to Manchester from Leeds. You crossed the Pennines, I suppose, and that is not a flat part of the country, is it?
No, it's definitely not. We discovered that coming out of Leeds, where we had a 15-mile straight hill, which never seemed to end coming up to the top. But once we got to the top, the views were amazing.
And the descents on all these things, yeah, I haven't skied in nearly 25 years, but it was as fun as powering down a black run. It was incredible, and yeah, all of us absolutely loved that thing. If that was really tough getting here, and now we're going to really enjoy going down the other side.
Yeah, it burnt through our brakes, though. It definitely burnt through the brakes, as I demonstrated in London when I went into the back of the bus.
Okay, we're going to get to London. We're going to get to London, but you guys had some people join you, didn't you? So outside of the five, there were people that joined along the way, and groups, and. A, how did that make you feel and to know that you were supported in that way? But B, how important was it that people joined you as well?
It was really important from the off. I mean, it was something we discussed in the planning around how we could involve other people. We were obviously really mindful of COVID rules and ensuring that we stayed safe and compliant with the rules, which changed as we went through different areas, actually, as well. You know, we did a COVID safe plan. We did the British Cycling Risk Assessment beforehand and make sure that when we had local riders that came along, we briefed them. We made sure they kept in groups of six. We wore masks and stayed separate whenever we were indoors at some of the venues, etc. So we went through everything that anyone would expect us to. And then, you know, it was a great, great bunch of riders that we had in the various different places. The first big group we had, I think, was probably Manchester to Liverpool, and then we went on to Warrington from there. Probably 12 to 15 additional riders.
Fantastic.
Horrific rain coming out of Manchester, but it was a really good group. And as Mark said, you know, we stayed together, stayed in those groups of six, and they looked after each other in the groups. And it was good support. And for me, what was great at that point was we really started to hear the stories of the people in our industry. They wanted to come and join us to show their support for us. And we wanted to get the message out about all the different people that are in our industry and are affected by what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, you kind of answered the next logical question was the people that joined you, they were bicycle enthusiasts, but they were they industry people as well? But also when you went to these venues, I saw pictures of you being welcomed to venues that you have all been in before. Were you able to take your message and explain it better so that the ripple effect happens where they... You guys can tell them what's happening, why you're raising money, and they go out and tell their people to spread the message? Is that...
I think so. I think we connected on that kind of basic kind of human being to human being level, which is, you know, it's what we all love about live music, live events, right? It's not this. It's not a Zoom call.
Yeah.
It's people stood around chatting to each other about stuff. And, you know, from the tiniest venues, you know, those guys who made us a bacon sandwich. I'm a veggie, so I don't even remember what my treat was that morning. I think it was a veggie burger in that tiny little kind of pub club in
Huddersfield. in Huddersfield, the parish in Huddersfield. Yeah.
Thank you for completing my sentence, sir. which was just being refurbed. They're doing some tiny little, low scale internet stuff from their club room upstairs. Yeah, from that level right to the guys at Wembley Stadium.
Mm.
We're chatting to people on the ground who have their own versions of struggling with, we just want to get back to work and do some stuff.
Well, you mentioned Wembley, which is, arguably the most iconic venue in the country, but you visited many venues. What were your favorite moments from those venues, if you can give me a few?
I think from the quite bizarre of the being on the stage at North Allison Forum with a pantomime dame, to walking back into a venue like the ACC in Liverpool, which I used to work at, and seeing people there and hearing about how they'd been affected. And then like going into Nottingham, the Royal Concert Hall there, where the senior technical manager showed us around and absolutely loved the venue to his core, showed us all of the size of the stage shocked me about, and this beautiful old venue that we saw. But it was just, there were so many moments.
And that place, Steve, we all were affected by that. We walked in, it was beautifully maintained. It was an amazing building that I'd not done a show in it. It's not really a music venue, it's a theatre. But as Steve says, the tech guys, they loved that place.
Yeah.
And it was in such beautiful condition, even though it hadn't been used in 7 months. And the idea that that wasn't functioning as a place for the local people to come and enjoy some theatre was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think, there were some tough times getting towards Birmingham, really, around, we were getting to halfway. We had a good bunch of riders there who helped us over that hump, really. And once we got through Birmingham, we all started to believe we could do this and actually get around. I think one of our favourite days, we talked about this, was the guys who cycled with us from Oxford to Bristol. It was a long day. I think it was maybe our longest day. I'm trying to think. It was 135K.
Wow.
It was tough weather and tough terrain, but those guys kept us at a really good space. Their chat was good. They motivated us. And they also bought us a brandy and a double espresso. That side was coming up a rather difficult thing.
which powered us up the last hill.
That's what you need.
Yeah. And then that day was like finished off with Plaster PR. Kelly from Plaster PR had arranged this TV and radio and the media there, and that was the moment where we felt, oh right, this is really getting some traction and people are noticing what we're doing here.
And now we pause for a quick word from our sponsors.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Welcome back to the Curtain Call podcast, where today's guests are Mark Ward from Proper Productions and Steve Reynolds from Loud Sound.
London must have been pretty special, guys, because the photographs that I saw from London were astonishing. Like, you guys hit so many venues in London. You passed so many places that it was like a whistle stop tour, almost a campaign, wasn't it, itself?
That bit of it was pretty extraordinary, John, because we got so used to, you do a town, then you just bash to the countryside and you just ride for a couple of hours. And we got into that mindset over 2 weeks. And then in London, it was just venue, all over the place, real quick.
Was it just like a growing sense of, my gosh, this is really, what we're doing here is really important and visible? Because I saw more and more people joining or noticing or kind of saying hello, taking photographs. It was pretty astonishing. The number of photographs on that day that were hitting the social medias was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we did the Brighton to London day, and we finished that day with probably 10 venues. So we got into Crystal Palace, which does a community festival, and it's also going to be the home, I think, of some of the Live Nation shows going forward. We then got to Brixton Academy, which is, you know, special to all of us. I've been there loads of times. I know Mark's done a ton of shows there. And then got to Clapham Common, Brockwell Park, Clapham Grand, where they tried to do that socially distanced show that didn't really work out. Got up to Ministry of Sound, got up to City Hall. Got up to Printworks, and then we finished at the O2, and they, you know, they let us go in and cycle around the arena again, that great empty shot of this huge arena that is there. And then we finished the evening staying over in the Indigo, which is the small sister venue inside the O2. So yeah, I mean, that set us up then for a good final day. Which started off a little bit more stressful than we'd wanted to, because we were supposed to get up nice and early and get the Emirates airline over to XL to start. So it's like a short jump straight over there to get it. And we got there, and despite what we'd been told, it was closed and not opening till 9 a.m. And we had a live BBC breakfast appearance at 8:25, so we quickly rooted into Google Maps and had to put another 10k furious cycle in before we even started that day. So
I don't think anybody's gone down that bit of Thames path as fast as we do.
That is just awesome. Is that why you hit the bus? Was that down? Like you went into the back of a bus, Steve, is that correct?
The bus was later. I think I was just, we'd been through, we started at XL and we'd done a few venues, London Stadium, Victoria Park, and then we got up to Alexandra Palace, and we were desperate for a coffee and a bacon sandwich, as we'd been doing all the way through. And I think it was just coming down that hill. It finished my brakes off, and before I knew it, I'd got into the back of the bus and fell over, and Nothing was hurt other than my pride. And like you say, I'm glad it happened on the last day. Otherwise, I'd have been had the rib taken out of me.
Worth noting,
John, that Steve was not the first to fall off.
Oh, really? Go for it. Oh, was it you?
It was Mark and his amazing young.
So, was it like the Wilhelm scream or whatever it is called? Yeah, tell me what happened then, Mark.
We were on some guerrilla moves, getting over a motorway, crossing a bridge, and it was raining really hard. I was pushing a little harder than I should have been. And cyclists will understand this. You turn the corner, there is a steel plate. There is nothing else. You're going over the steel plate.
Oh.
And yeah. I knew as soon as I saw it, okay, I'm going to hit the ground now.
Yeah.
Because 23 millimeter wheels at 110 psi, steel plates and rain. I'm not happy bedfellows.
Nope.
So yeah, hit the ground I did.
And did it hurt?
Similar to Steve, more my pride than anything else. Nobody likes to fall off. But I was back on, and on we went, same as Steve.
I have to ask you about being saddle sore. You know, how long did it take you to get used to it? Or did it at all?
It definitely took some getting used to. I mean, I think the whole like physical pressure on your body happened over the first week, and I was, you know, really struggling. The legs were aching, butt was aching. You know, it really took some time to get used to it. I was reassured by the fact that people had said they'd done. Lands End, Johnny Groat said, once you get through like day five, then your body starts to get used to it. So when we got to Nottingham on like day six and my legs were still aching, I was a little bit concerned.
You're like bastards, they lied.
We managed to get a sports massage, and Liam, did a world of wonder on our legs. And kind of from there, with a little bit of advice around what else we needed to do around stretching and rolling and stuff, legs kind of got used to it, really. I mean, extremely painful to touch, and definitely still some time to go before they're back to their previous state. But it's like anything, as long as you look after your body, then you'll get through anything.
And I think, John, I was told before I went by a friend of mine who's far more athletic than me, who'd done a bunch of the Tour de France stages, that don't worry about it, Mark. After 3-4 days, your butt will hurt so much you'll forget that your legs hurt. And he was pretty spot on.
You just don't know what to do with that. You think, oh, fantastic, let's get going then. We have got to talk about the fundraising, because you guys, I mean, it's just been brilliant.
Honestly, John, I haven't checked it today, but the last time I did, we were just over 30 grand if you count the gift aid, which is great. You know, it's certainly more than we ever imagined at the start. We're hopeful that we can keep that going for a little while longer, with a kind of wrap up, contact with friends and colleagues of, this is what we did. These are some of the press pieces from it. This is some of the impact we hope it made. If you've not managed to contribute yet and you feel like you can, then this is how to do it.
Perfect. And we'll put the links to the show notes in the show notes to the giving page, and make sure that, I mean, come on, let's push it. Let's hit 50K. Guys, just if you haven't donated, donate and tell people about it, because it's phenomenal what you guys
have done. It would be amazing to get there. I mean, we met John, who's one of the trustees of the charity in Brighton, and he came to see us. He's been shielding himself, so he's not really been out, so it was really nice that he came down to see us, and it really hit home for us, like what the money was going to do and to help. And he told us how overwhelmed they've been, particularly over the last few weeks, in terms of numbers of calls, and it's people from all levels of the industry, you know, from stage crew and technicians to creative directors. And he said that these are people who've, you know, been working in this industry for their whole lives, and they're now out of work and you know, desolate and struggling to cope with what to do. And not only is there a financial impact, there's obviously a clear mental health impact.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what we hope that some of this money will go towards, is to help support that, because it's super important to us.
That's so, thank you so much for those efforts and keeping that highlighted, because there is no shame in people feeling whatever they're feeling right now. It's every single, if you feel happy, it's valid. If you feel like you can't face it, that's also valid. And it's fantastic that guys like you and your team have gone out to raise both the money, but also the awareness that you have. So thank you very much. You guys have inspired some people as well. I hear there are other tours that are about to kick off or that are being planned because they saw the success of this one. Is that just is that just another, you know, thing that can keep you going for a few more months, knowing that you guys have done something that has inspired other people to do the same and more?
Yeah, we're really chuffed about that, John, that, you know, we're hearing the same as you, that there are folks in Wales and in Scotland and in Northern Ireland, within the UK. There's also interest from Spain and from Italy, and maybe some of the other regions where we make events have become active, to, you know, take what we've done and do another different, better version of a similar thing. And we're absolutely 110% behind whoever wants to be as stupid as we all were.
Well, guys, listen, thank you so much for sitting down with me again. I mean, but...
And I think just one final point, if we may, John.
Absolutely.
There's a metaphor that we used when we were out on the road for ourselves, that it kind of felt like being in the band. And we all get that without the people around the band, there isn't a show. So, you know, the backup squad, the folks that were looking after us remotely as we were out on the road, the people that were helping us with the socials, with the media, the local riders, the people that put the greeting stuff together for us, the people that allowed us into their venues for overnights. Without all those people, this just wouldn't have worked. So it really isn't just about the five of us. We just did the writing bit. And that is also comparable with the band part, that actually that's maybe not the hardest part. It's the stuff wrapped around it that's arguably the more difficult piece of the puzzle to put together. So huge thanks to all those people. We couldn't have done it without.
Well, you guys are rock stars. You are rock stars. And I'm looking forward to the album. Guys,
it'll be really, really shit.
Awesome. All right, have a great evening, and we'll speak to you soon, guys.
Thanks. Thank you, John. Take care.
Stephen Reynolds from Loud Sound and Mark Ward from Proper Productions there on the completion of their 1,500-kilometer bike journey as part of the We Make Events campaign. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping bits. Follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Curtain Call, and you can follow me at John Schwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Just get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Mark Ward and Stephen Reynolds. If you want to donate to the campaign, please visit wemakeevents.com/the-survival-tour. And if you'd like to find out more about the We Make Events 5 Asks, you can find that at wemakeevents.com/UK. It also has all kinds of hints on how you can help support the We Make Events campaigns, including writing your MP or supporting the activations that they have going on around the globe. I'd like to thank Shure Microphones for sponsoring this episode. Thanks to you for listening to the Curtain Call Theater podcast. And as the tiers here in the UK seem to be going from 1 to 2 to 3 rather quickly, I'd just like to ask everyone, please stay safe. Continue washing your hands and wear masks. But also, you know, call someone, anyone, ask them how they're doing. You might just help them get through the day. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.